The Public Safety Finance Committee will come to order. This morning's agenda, members, we'll have two budget presentations, one on the 911 armor, and then a second on CrimNet. So we have allotted 45 minutes for each presentation, and at least for the 911 armor presentation, I know we have numerous presenters, so you're going to have to craft out your time because we really are limited to about 45 minutes in order to make sure that we have enough time for questions and answers from the committee. So with that, Commissioner Leslie, are you ready to begin?
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members. Thank you for this opportunity to provide information to you on the statewide interoperable radio system, otherwise known as ARMOR. I'm Tim Leslie, Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Public Safety, and sitting next to me is Mr. Ron Whitehead, Program Director for the ARMOR 911 program. The plan for today and this morning is for Mr. Whitehead and I to spend about 30 minutes providing information to you on why this system is so important to us and the state and public safety, development of this system, the drivers for this change, how we compare to other states, and to answer the question of why now. After that, we'll take your questions. We'll start out with a short video designed to provide baseline information for you. This video was developed by the Metropolitan Radio Board, the group that governed the phase one and two build-outs of the statewide radio system, and the precursor of the current statewide radio board.
In virtually any situation, the first piece of equipment emergency response personnel reach for is their radio. And at that moment, nothing is more important than the ability to communicate. Today, a growing number of law enforcement, fire, and emergency medical professionals, along with other essential public service users, begin using the new Minnesota Regional Public Service Radio System. This state-of-the-art digital radio network helps users at the local, county, state, and federal levels work more efficiently and safely. It delivers unprecedented interoperability among agencies, superior geographical coverage, unequal channel availability, and the improved system reliability when, in an instant, everything changes and the difference between life and death can be measured in moments.
The technology and the capability of the 800 megahertz system surpasses what we have in the previous radio system. The firefighter, the EMS personnel, the police officer, the snow plow truck driver is going to have a radio that's going to be very reliable and is going to give them the ability to do their job every day.
It was a typical quiet afternoon in this Columbia Heights neighborhood when an elderly woman heard a knock on her door. The last person she expected was an off-duty and unarmed police officer who had been shot by an assailant without provocation.
What that shooting ignited was basically a 30-minute running gun battle.
With the gunman still firing on an innocent neighborhood, it was fast becoming clear that multi-jurisdictional communications capabilities would be stretched beyond capacity.
It was very chaotic. You had dispatching going on our channel one primary south channel. You had communications going on MNSA channel four. When this happens, not everybody is dispatching. Not everybody's communicating.
Over 100 Minneapolis officers were on scene and available to assist Columbia Heights. But because the agencies were unable to coordinate their efforts via direct communication, gaining control of the scene was next to impossible.
We're probably only 2 minutes into this and realizing we don't have any communications with each other.
Officers were getting into each other's cars, Hennepin County, Minneapolis City, Anoka County, and listening to each other's dispatchers.
And that's just law enforcement. What about emergency medical services? What about the fire departments that responded? That's where it became a real challenge to communicate effectively and coordinate everybody's efforts.
The ability to put hundreds of people on a single channel is just not feasible. You have to have the ability to break those people out and at different times reconnect them together. The current system just won't handle it.
While recent incidents at the local as well as national level draw attention to the need for change, it was already known as far back as the mid-80s that large metropolitan areas could no longer rely on separate, uncoordinated radio systems, some of which were installed before the Nixon administration.
Today, the complexity of our operations, although the fires haven't necessarily changed, the complexity of our infrastructure dealing with incident command, dealing with other outside agencies such as EMS, police, and county sheriffs has become a very complex operation.
The rapid growth of the metro area had outgrown the previous system's coverage, as large office buildings, apartment complexes, and other tall structures popped up. Coverage became increasingly difficult. As cities and suburbs grew, more agencies were needed, resulting in an acute shortage of frequencies. Lack of interoperability, spotty coverage, congested channels, coupled with radio equipment considered obsolete by today's standards, were the true catalysts for the introduction of the new 800 MHz regional public service radio system. Today, emergency response teams will have the ability to connect with the people they need, when they need them. This enhanced level of coverage is made possible by a ring of transmitter and receiver sites placed throughout the metro area. Individual users can roam freely, even beyond jurisdictional lines, and still maintain communications with members of their home site. The regional public service radio system, with the unique ability to assign an unlimited number of incident-specific talk groups right into the palm of the user's hand,
having the ability to talk directly to that entry team without outside interference would definitely enhance not only the operation, but provide for additional safety for the entry team and all the other teams working
in an era when the security of the state of Minnesota and its citizens takes on national proportions, interoperability with outside agencies and neighboring jurisdictions is crucial. And the ability to interoperate with other entities simplifies coordination efforts for superior incident management. The new regional public service radio system is dynamic in its design. It allows for the addition of a high-speed data layer with the capacity to deliver fingerprint data, mugshots, video, and the developing PrimNet system directly into public safety vehicles in the future. In any emergency situation, nothing is more important to responding agencies than the ability to maintain open and coordinated communications. And when quick response times and positive outcomes can be measured in moments, the Regional Public Service Radio System delivers.
Mr. Chair and members, as Assistant Commissioner, I chair the Statewide Radio Board for Commissioner Campion. I supervise Mr. Whitehead and have been involved in this enterprise since I came to the Department of Public Safety from the St. Paul Police Department in the year 2003. Frankly, I know just enough about this topic to be considered dangerous. At the St. Paul Police Department, I held many positions, but the experience I had on August 26, 1994, as a SWAT team supervisor during the search for Ron Ryan and Tim Jones killer remains fresh in my mind today. I didn't really understand the concept of communications interoperability back then because, like many officers of this era and that era, we accepted our communication systems for what they were and we dealt with them. On that day, I can recall that I could not directly communicate with the State Patrol helicopter or with officers from outside agencies that were there helping us search for the killer. We were required to place a St. Paul police officer into the helicopter. I would radio instructions to that officer who would then reiterate those instructions to the pilot. Later, when we conducted yard-to-yard searches, we had to intersperse St. Paul police officers among other agency teams, so we had command, control, and the ability to communicate with all personnel during the yard-to-yard search phases. The inability of first responders to communicate in real time with those on the scene of a human-caused event or natural disaster creates delays in action. In matters of life and death, these delays can have catastrophic consequences. You've probably heard of some of the stories where communications failures have plagued first responders. Hurricane Katrina, 9/11, Columbine, Oklahoma City, closer to home, the St. Peter tornadoes, the riots in Mankato, gasoline explosion in St. Cloud, and many others. What these catastrophes have in common is that they all require assistance from first responders beyond the borders of the city where the event has occurred. Floods, tornadoes, or an act of violence at a school site do not discriminate or care about government boundaries. They all require a coordinated response to ensure services get to those who need help. The ability to quickly and effectively communicate, which this system provides, is a key factor towards a successful and safe resolution of these events. Creating communications interoperability, though, is much more than just a matter of technology. People talk about this concept like it's a new radio device or patching system, when in fact, true interoperability involves matters of leadership, governance, standard operating procedures, partnerships, training, and the exercising of plans to evaluate if the system is operating as it was designed. The system contains all of those components. This initiative to build out the armor system is contemporary. What you will learn today is that many states are building or have built statewide interoperable radio systems. But we here in Minnesota are not leading the way. I would consider us in the second tier of states ahead of some, but behind others. The Department of Homeland Security considers this their number one national priority for states, and the grant guidance documents are all very clear about that. This program area is the Department of Public Safety's top priority as well, due to what we have heard from our customers as we travel across this state. I want to warn you up front about what you may hear when you begin to explore this enterprise. There are skeptics out there. Not sure what it is about those of us in public safety, but we're just a tad hesitant to change sometimes. In my experience, the skeptics have one thing in common. They are not currently operating on this system. So I'd please ask you that if you encounter a skeptic, ask him or her if they have experience with this system, are they a current user, are they familiar with the system's capacities and capabilities. Some of the testifiers that are here today were once skeptics but are now believers. At this point, I'll turn it over to Mr. Whitehead, who will walk us through the history and development of the system, its drivers, and why we need to get this done now.
Mr. Whitehead, you want to introduce yourself for the record, please?
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ronald Whitehead. I'm the 911 program director with the Department of Public Safety. And I'll just take a brief moment to give you a little bit of my background. I retired as the deputy chief of police with the city of Bloomington. And I would take particular note of that fact as the city of Bloomington had made a substantial investment in 1991 in another radio system, a trunk 800 megahertz radio system. And as the system was developed, there was an inclination that we would just maintain our own system. And interoperability became so critically important with the Mall of America and so forth that Bloomington has actually taken a system early in its useful life, about halfway through its useful life, and transitioned to the metropolitan phase one of the armor system. And that marks the transition of Hennepin County, all the dependent communities, the independent communities, and so forth. But that was a tremendous commitment to interoperability by the city of Bloomington. And I take a lot of pride in the fact that before I came to the state, I was involved in that transition from a local system to the metropolitan regional system, taking what might be a state-of-the-art system and actually making the transition to an entirely different system for the sake of interoperability. But what I'll move into is the fact that the armor system, or the armor plan, has actually been around for quite some period of time. That discussion occurred back in the 1980s, as indicated in the video. And then in 1995, the legislature created the Metropolitan Radio Board and funded that with a portion of the 911 fee in 1997. Phase one was actually planned between 1997 and 2001 and implemented at the end of 2001 and into 2002. With that implementation of phase one, which did include Hennepin County, Carver County, and the city of Minneapolis, the Metropolitan Radio Board ultimately transitioned into what we refer to as a regional radio board. Phase two of the armor plan was the full integration of the metropolitan area onto the system. What I'm here to tell you, and very proud of the fact, is the entire metropolitan area will be fully integrated into the radio system in 2008. Ramsey County, Dakota County are in the process right now. Washington County, Chisago County, or Washington County and Scott County will be fully integrated. And when I say that, I'm not referring only to public safety, what you traditionally think of police, fire, and emergency medical groups. That is as a governmental radio system with all governmental entities involved, public health, the various constituency groups, school systems in some cases on the radio system. The issues that are reflected that we're currently confronting in communications, everybody's confronting. And this is a total renewing the wireless infrastructure of the state for both the state purposes and local communities. The armor plan per se was presented to the legislature in 2001 and was adopted by the legislature in 2002. What it called for was a four additional phases of the implementation. And in fact, in 2002, phase three was partially funded, but we weren't able to proceed with that. But did in fact call for each year to move ahead. 2002, 2003, 2004, and 2005 make that backbone available. I want to take a brief moment, however, and give you a few pieces from that report that was made to the legislature why we're doing this. We're in the process, obviously, of renewing the wireless infrastructure of the state of Minnesota. As part of the study that was done to the legislature in 2002, it was determined that because of numerous drivers, obsolescence, the antiquatedness of the communication system, if we do it separately, we will probably collectively, local city, county, and state governments will spend as much as $1.4 billion on the high side for county and local governments, up to $8 million. In other words, if every local government out there replaces their existing system, they'll be spending a lot more money than we do this collectively. The state's share is pretty much the same. Building the backbone is still the same. But providing a common backbone that everybody can work on, providing that interoperability through that common backbone, it is economically much more efficient to do that than to allow everybody to do their individual, to rebuild or have everybody rebuild their existing systems. Why, as part of this, I'll presuppose rhetorically, why are we going to 800 and 700 megahertz? That's where the federal government has put us. In 1996 and 1998, the federal government went to the FCC and NETA, who allocates frequencies, and said, open up additional spectrum for public safety. They need it. And we'll need all kinds more spectrum in the future. FCC and NETA came back and says, we can't do it. It isn't possible to reallocate the VHF spectrum anymore. And that's when they first opened up the 800 megahertz spectrum, and then have subsequently opened the 700 megahertz spectrum. And they're all part of the same spectrum. There's 800 is down on the low end, 700 is up on the high end, so it's a contiguous spectrum there that's applicable to this entire system and available. The 700 that's just recently been opened up provides almost 10 times more frequency spectrum than was initially provided in 800. Next question, why are we using trunking technology? Trunking allows us to make the most efficiency out of the spectrum we have. It takes 7 frequencies and gives us the opportunity to create 500 talk groups, which are the logical equivalent of a frequency. Gives us tremendous flexibility in providing talk groups or frequencies to reconfigure those frequencies as we need them to create interoperability, and yet to operate as if we're operating our old in the way we used to. What are the other dynamics that are causing us to change? The aging of systems has been mentioned many times. 1970s systems that really were based on 1950s technology. New technology, we're going from analog to digital. I would submit to you that the analog is like is very much like buying a phonograph record nowadays, whereas the digital provides us additional flexibility in how we can continue to move with these systems in the future. And then obviously the other issue is trunking versus connect. Conventional provides us greater flexibility with spectrum use. And then finally, the FCC mandate, which is really a part of everybody's discussion, is that the VHF and UHF frequencies are required to be narrowband. In other words, we're required to replace the communications infrastructure no matter what by 2013, going to narrowband spectrum. Why now? The plan, as indicated earlier, the original plan called for an annual progress from phase to phase to 2006. If we fund this project now, it'll take us to 2012 to get it done. And everybody's in the midst of the need to replace their systems. We need to get that system out there so people can consider this as one of the alternatives. Phase three, I will tell you, was funded in 2005. We're currently, that involves central Minnesota going out to the South Dakota border. It was funded with $45 million. We did fund $8 million for phase two costs that helped complete the metropolitan area. And then there's $9.5 million that was allocated for local enhancements in phase three. This involves 23 counties in central Minnesota and southeastern Minnesota. Stearns County and Olmsted County were already built in large part with Homeland Security funds and are part of the system already. The backbone is under construction. By the end of this year, those 23 counties will be added to the backbone of the armor system. I want to draw your attention, and one of the material pieces you received was a scorecard we received from the Department of Homeland Security on tactical interoperability. This Twin Cities metropolitan area, the urban security area, received a perfect score in tactical interoperability. It was based on an exercise that we've done at the Mall of America, involved multiple disciplines, multiple jurisdictions, state, federal, county, and local. I think what's key to remember there, and it's something the commissioner, assistant commissioner said, was that this is the technology that provides the basis for us to move ahead and create interoperability. That scorecard scored the urban area, and again, we received the perfect score, one of six urban areas out of 75 in the nation to receive a perfect score, and scored us upon on governance, upon standard operating procedures, and upon the usage of the system, and demonstrated that the system is able to provide us with the flexibility, but more importantly, creates the relationships and the discussion about preparing for the use of the system for these kind of incidences. The governor, what we're here is discussing the governor's recommendation with respect to the armor system, and we feel very strongly it's a very comprehensive approach to this to get the system done over the next 4 years. It provides for completion of the armor backbone by the year 2012. It allows us to begin the detailed design work for phases 4, 5, and 6. It provides for us to begin site acquisition in areas 4, 5, and 6 where we need lead time to identify sites, to clear the environmental hurdles, and get the backbone in place. It provides for an upgrade of the metro backbone. Due to the delay in continuing the implementation, the phase three was implemented on a different phase of the operating system than the metropolitan area was. It provides for us to maintain a common backbone for that system so we can maintain the maximum interoperability. And it allows us to begin construction in June of 2006 once we've gotten those pieces put together. And it funds backbone operating costs. One of the biggest questions as I go throughout the state talking with people is what's it going to cost us to operate on this backbone, because there are ongoing sustaining costs to the backbone. And the governor's recommendation provides for funding of the backbone costs such that local users who operate on the state backbone won't have to pay an operating cost. That will be provided for from the 911 fund. Governor's funding recommendation comes from the 911 fund. Again, it provides the one-time costs are provided from funds that are available in the 911 fund, and then provides for an increase in the 911 fee of 10 cents in fiscal year 2009, 10 cents in fiscal year 2010, 10 cents in fiscal year 2011, which will allow us to sell bonds and continue to proceed ahead with implementing the system over the next 4 years and get it in place so it's an available alternative for the state and for local users as we move across the state, and providing the maximum level of interoperability. What I did also hand out as part of this was a review of where Minnesota stands with the 911 fee. And I will acknowledge a 30% or a 30-cent increase does place us higher in the overall specter of 911 fees. Right now we're in the low center. If we go to 30 cents, we'll be in the upper third, but we won't be at the highest level of 911 fees across the country.
And a quick question, Mr. Whitehead. When the backbone's completed, the infrastructure's in place, all the phases are completed, is there a possibility that the technology is going to change dramatically? And if it does, is that backbone and is that infrastructure adaptable to those kinds of changes?
Mr. Chair, members of the community, in fact, that's really the key point here, is that what we are doing is renewing the wireless infrastructure. Will there be technology changes? Yes, I suspect there will be. What we are doing is building the platform for new technology in the future. This system will provide us, has a life cycle, and will provide us with our communication needs for the next 20 to 30 years, and will be available to provide that. The RF element, in other words, the piece that goes to the portables, is but a portion of the cost. It also involves building a backbone upon which we can continue to advance the technology across the state, be it Wi-Fi or something else in the future. And I would submit to you that some of these technologies, although they're out there and being discussed, there is nothing being applied to public safety systems as of yet as far as the new technology, the radio of the future. This truly is positions us to exploit newer technologies in the future as the commissioner said, to look at providing data for squad cars. And if there is a new technology, you still need towers, you still need connections between the towers, and a good portion of the cost is providing that connectivity out there, or providing that backbone that will serve us many, many years into the future.
Representative Easton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is kind of from a higher elevation at this point. We spend a tremendous amount of money for technology. You know, I mean, it seems like every agency is coming here and we just see astronomical dollar requests for upgrading technology, and it never ends. I've been on this committee for 4 years prior to this, and we've been on this issue every year, talking about progress and talking about where we're going and completing the system. Could you just give us a little bit of a history? And I think we funded some of the first stuff here for this in 2003 and maybe a little bit before that. But when we started on this road, what was the projected cost to finish? How much have we spent to date? And what's it going to cost to finish from here?
Do I have brief responses?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would say that since it was initially funded, the cost has probably gone up about 20%. That's when, in 2002, in our estimates of what it would cost to complete the system. Completing the system, we feel fairly comfortable, is $186 million to build the backbone. That's about 20% more than was originally estimated in the 2001 plan. Technology changes, and it's difficult to require our public safety responders to adapt to a changing world using 1940s and 1950s technology, and that's what, in essence, we may be doing now.
Representative, do you have a follow-up? Representative,
I guess going back to my question, how much was it going to cost? You said $186 million. How much have we spent to date, and what's it going to cost to finish? And when I say that, I mean more than just for the state. I mean we have local all the local costs that eventually the state is going to have to come and assist in also. So just give us an indication of what we spent to date and how much we have left to finish the project, so it works all over the state.
Mr. Whitehead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, on backbone in metropolitan area, we spent $36 million. Local investments probably have been in the tune of $100 million in the metropolitan area. requires significant infrastructure. We spent $45 million on phase three. That's backbone costs. As I previously indicated, $186 million was I don't know. That's 20%. That's 20% increase, and I don't have the figure in the 2001. As far as local enhancements, we haven't got a good handle on that. That's one of the issues as we do the detailed design work. Will be move ahead and get an answer as to what kind of local enhancements people will want. Will it be substantial? Yes, it will be substantial. This is the backbone cost. Portables and mobiles are a substantial investment, but everybody's got to invest in those costs no matter what.
Representative Haas. Thank you very much. As the past Park and Recreation Director for the City of St. Cloud, we were the gophers for the civil defense, so they didn't have person, power, and machines, so anytime there was an emergency or disaster, our department went in and they would boss us around to do those things, and it was fine with that. And I quickly learned that the difference between an emergency and a disaster is when the communication system goes out, you can't communicate, you have now taken an emergency to a disaster. And when we think of communication, we think of communication when everything is working, but as soon as you apply that emergency to it, it breaks down because it gets overpressured. So I thought for a while cell phones would really solve this. There is no way is a cell phone going to operate. You would think that you'd be able to go to computers and computers would operate, but it's overloaded because everybody's on them and the computer system goes down. And now you're down to somebody with little notes running around or standing between cars. So this is a really important thing we're doing. But my question goes all the way down to your question. We get all this backbone and all this stuff going, but how are we going to actually have the functioning radios in the townships, in the small cities, in the rural counties, so after we got all this going, that we actually have the finishing touch so the system works? We'd have a system that could work, but unless we get that stuff into the township and into the small cities, into the poor counties, you'll still not be able to communicate. Mr. Whitehead, do you have a response?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, I agree with you. Obviously, there's an issue there. As far as buying the portables and mobiles and getting them out to each other, and there is a substantial cost to that. As I've previously indicated, we don't have a full handle on that. Providing the back, everybody's in the nature of having to plan for some sort of change in their communication system and replacing that. Having this as an alternative for them is very critical. Having the backbone in place and providing the opportunity to use the backbone for interoperability, even if they choose not to go to the system, we can clearly enhance interoperability using the backbone, even if they should decide to maintain their own system. But there's no way to get around the fact that these systems everybody has throughout government were put in place back in the 70s and 80s, 60s in some cases. They've got to be replaced. I haven't got an answer for the governor's recommendation doesn't say fund all the portables and mobiles to the local communities in that respect, but it does provide to get the backbone there so that at least it's available alternative as we move ahead.
Just one quick comment.
Representative Haas.
We were talking the other day on the floor on a voting machine that wasn't affordable in the township. If they can't afford that voting machine, they also can't afford this radio system. And then we have a system that we have the whole backbone for and still not going to operate because the townships and the poor rural counties are not going to be able to put them in. And I'm not saying I have the money or an answer, but I do know the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Haas. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Whitehead. I have a letter from Washington County Commissioner Myra Peterson, and she indicates that, or you indicated that you were in phase three right now and should be completing that within the year, and so that means we haven't gotten yet to 456, and then she's saying that, gosh, we have to upgrade phase one, or the metro area, phase one and two, right now to the tune of $5 million. Does the 30 census cover that? And does that, the upgrade for phase one and two, take precedent over four, five, and six? Or what?
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, yes, it does. That's anticipated. And the necessity of upgrading is the result of the fact that we delayed this moving ahead this project for 6 years and bringing it up to a common platform. The governor's recommendation does include funding to bring us all up to a common platform to maintain the highest level of interoperability throughout the state. And so it is included within the 50-cent provision. In fact, we have the funding for that at this point in time.
And
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Whitehead, then, does the upgrading of 4 and 5 come before 6 then?
Mr. Whitehead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, no. We would move ahead with 4, 5, and 6 as quickly as we can over this next year period. We'd do the detailed design work and then start implementing. In fact, if we fund the project as a whole, we would like to remove the phasing and start building and putting the system out on those towers we already have in place and getting it in place, and then on towers that we have to. It takes us lead time to get to isolate and get the perfect our rights for those towers, implement those, and get a backbone in place as swiftly as we can.
So, Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Whitehead, so after the metro is updated, then there won't need, will there be a need for more updates in the other phases?
Mr. Whitehead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, there may be some need at some point to update it. However, once we get to a common platform, we can stay with that platform and would like to stay with that platform for 20 years. There are software upgrades that are minor changes to it, but major changes like this upgrade in the metropolitan area would not be necessary for 20 years into the future. The life cycle of the product is approximately 20 years.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Murphy.
Over the 20 years, then, will the $1.90 continue to cover all the expenses?
Mr. Whitehead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, we are hoping that it will, that will be part of the detailed design work if the Commissioner of Finance, Public Safety and Transportation can't come back and say that we can do this project in those funds when we do the detailed design work. Then we'll make sure that it does. I mean, we're not leaping ahead blindly, and the anticipation is the 30-cent increase will cover that in the operating costs.
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Whitehead, do you have a breakout of how much the individuals in phase, the last part of phase three and four and five and six are paying before they have a service, before they're getting their service?
Mr. Whitehead.
I'm sorry, I don't quite understand. You mean how much they're paying in 911 fees or?
Yes, in the 911 fees.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, they're all paying 65 cents on their telephone bills right now for 911. How that, they've been contributing to what we've built so far. There's no question about it. And the governor's recommendation clearly says, let's move ahead and give them what they've been paying for also in the, a backbone for a system. And hopefully as soon as we possibly can.
And
Representative Murphy.
And Mr. Chairman, Mr. Whitehead. And apparently they're paying for upgrades to service that they're not yet receiving either. And so that's hard to explain. But Mr. Wiggins is going to come and talk to me about this meeting, and so I'm going to save the rest of my questions for the half.
Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, if you'd be kind enough to allow me to come with, I'd be happy to answer your questions also.
Representative Fiskins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Whitehead, how many vendors currently provide the hardware necessary to utilize it, provide the radios, portables, etc., that a local unit of government would have to shop around?
Mr. Whitehead.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, actually, as far as portables and mobiles, there's three vendors that are qualified, and one other that's likely to come on. Those vendors of portables and mobiles are Motorola, Kenwood, and EF Johnson. MyCom now produces a P25 capable radio that can work on the system and will probably be authorized on the system. The RF element is largely a Motorola piece. Actually, by upgrading to the newer platform, it's likely in the future that we can look at other vendors that may even be able to provide some of the major element pieces. Powers and microwave capacity are the microwave backbone and so forth are provided by a number of different vendors and is done so very competitively.
Representative Distance. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to comment that my chief was in the video. We have been on this system. It has been very, very successful. And I am very pleased that we're attempting to go statewide, that it will be very useful. Representative Murphy, in addition to there being fees that your community has paid for 911 and not having the system, our communities have paid to use the system, and the new communities will not have to pay that service charge along the way. So hopefully, I did ask for the numbers that our area paid, for which the outstate will, rural areas will not have to pay, to see if we can get a balance and see if those numbers are anywhere close.
Well spoken. Representative Cornish.
Mr. Chair, I know the time is short, so a couple of quick comments. I think we're kind of fooling ourselves in one respect. We're almost trying to nail these folks down saying there's not going to be any future costs or need for upgrades. There isn't any equipment that we use in the state office building, from our Palm Pilots to our cell phones to these screens to cameras to our computers, that don't need upgrades. I mean, we should be, you know, upfront about this. Of course we're going to have to upgrade it, but we're setting the main frames in now that we can build upon, and there's going to be upgrades, and there's going to be costs, and there's going to be tails. We just have to face it. The other comment is the reason that this is dragging on is because we're not funding it. We need to, the easiest way to solve this whole problem is just fund it once for all and build it. The longer we drag this on, we're doing the same thing as we are with transportation we're complaining about. We're dribbling transportation, more money, a little bit money each year, and then we're wondering why it's crumbling underneath us. We've got to fund this megahertz system and get it done. Then we'll stop these departments from getting frustrated out there that aren't getting it and that are trying to go their own way. We just need to put the price out there, figure out what it is, and fund it and get done with the problem, and I think it'll take care of itself once we do that. So thank you.
I guess that means a yes from Representative Cornish on the increase in the gas tax. Representative Liebling.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I kind of agree with Representative Cornish. I mean, I think this is very important, and I think your point is very well taken, that it's not as though it's this or nothing. There would be other costs, and there would be local governments would have to be doing other things, and so I think that's all very important. But my question is, in the video, when there was the example of an emergency situation, or I believe in the testimony you were talking about what you had to do to put a police officer in for communications, and it occurred to me that this kind of a system really saves on personnel, doesn't it? Because in this situation, you can allocate your personnel and not have to waste man hours, person hours, doing these kinds of functions. So maybe this is a bit of a softball question, but I mean, could you talk a little bit about that? What does it do in terms of being able to allocate people better, maybe being able to save on overtime because you only need maybe a smaller number of people in any situation?
Commissioner, you want to take?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members. I think what this system provides, which we currently don't have, is the requirement that agencies that will need to interoperate, police, fire, school systems, public works, when they know that eventually they will need to communicate together. So they have to get together ahead of time and talk about how that's going to work. And that right now does not happen. Usually, some forward-thinking units of government do that, but many don't. So when you're required to communicate together, you're going to first be required to sit down and talk about who's going to be in charge based on what kind of a situation. If we have a school shooting, okay, are you coming? Yes. Okay, well, you're going to be operating on this talk group, and this is how we're going to communicate. So the pre-planning creates less of a Keystone Cop mentality. Everyone just doesn't come racing together and not know where to go, and you have chaos. First thing you got to do is control the chaos, and then we can start getting services to the public. If we don't have the chaos, then we can get the services to the public faster, and communication, the key to that is communication.
Okay, we have a lot of folks that came to testify, so if we're ready, maybe we should, if you're done with your presentation.
Thank you.
We have Sheriff Steve Borchardt from Olmsted County first. And why doesn't Sheriff Pat Madure from Itasca County come up also, so we can, if you could just maybe limit your comments to a couple minutes, that would be helpful. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Steve Borchardt. I'm the Sheriff of Olmsted County, and I'm also speaking representing the Minnesota Sheriff's Association. This has been our number one priority legislatively for the Minnesota Sheriff's Association for at least the last 5 years, and continues to be at this point. We strongly support this measure to get this system statewide once and for all, so that our sheriffs out on the fringes of the state know that this technology is available to them and have that choice available to them, and so that we can all be on the same platform. We don't send personnel across the state further away than our primary neighbors frequently. But when we do, it's for major disasters, and communication is absolutely essential. We've had very graphic illustrations of that in our nation in the last 7 years. Of course, starting with 9/11 in New York City and a year and a half ago on the southern coast for Hurricane Katrina. The greatest failing for the Department of Homeland Security is that they have failed with all the money that's been appropriated in the last 7 years to create single platform interoperable wireless communication for public safety across this nation. Minnesota has been one of the leaders in how we've leveraged the money that we received in that regard. But we still have failed to make it available statewide. And so it's very, very important. Other than that, Representative Cornish and Representative Liebling pretty well covered any comments I would make, so I won't go any further unless you have questions for me.
Thank you for your testimony. Sheriff Madure, I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that right. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Sheriff Pat Madure from Itasca County Sheriff's Office. I've been sheriff for the last 12 years. We're the third largest county in the state of Minnesota. We're in Grand Rapids. I'm here today to talk about my skepticalism on this 800 megahertz radio system that I had 6 years ago. That has since changed. I did a 180-degree turnaround on this after we in Itasca County sat down and looked at what we needed to do in regards to upgrading our radio system. 6.5 years ago, we put a committee together to start looking at our communication system. In Itasca County, we have 8 law enforcement agencies, 16 fire, 4 EMS, and 14 first responders. And at the time, the 800 megahertz was not on the table. We went out and did a radio study, and after the study came back, it showed us and told us that we need to sit down and take a look at 800 megahertz. This is a system that is of the future, and is a system that will work in Itasca County. With that said, we also looked at who else can we partner up with in Itasca County. We went to our County Road and Bridge Engineer's Office. They're going to come to our system. County Probation, which was never on a communication system before, is going to come onto the system. Our County Land Department is going to switch over to the 800. County Assessor's Office, which has never been on a communication system, is going to come on board. We have 3 Public Works divisions from 3 separate cities within our county that is going to come onto the system. We've reached out to our school districts, which we have 4 in our county. There's been a plan to the future as far as coming onto our system. And we have 3 hospitals currently in our county that is planning on coming onto the system as well. Our current system is over 40 years old. Our newest piece to our current system is 24 years old. So I think you can see how bad of a system we have in Hull. Soon we need to get on a system. We're ahead of the phase six. Itasca County was in phase six of the state rollout system. So we're ahead of the state of Minnesota in building this system. But we're building the system in partnership with the state of Minnesota, so when the time comes, when phase six rolls out, we can tie into the state system. I'm not concerned about interoperability with my neighboring counties. Everything that we're doing within our system and the building of our system will still be able to communicate with the counties around us until when, if and when they jump onto the 800 megahertz system. So I'm confident that we'll have a system that's going to work for us in Itasca County today and into the future that's going to be beneficial to all citizens within our county. Thank you, and I strongly urge you to support this initiative that's moving forward. It's the right way to go. Thank you.
Sheriff, we have a question for you, Representative Eastland.
Sheriff, what is it costing your county? What do you project the cost of your county to make the transition, I think, before it be that you're actually making right now?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm sorry. For public safety, it's going to cost us $9.4 million, and our county board has taken the initiative and a step forward to bond for this project to make it happen. We're fortunate where we received some Homeland Security dollars. We reached out and got some firefighting assistance dollars. We raised about $1 million ourselves already. But the county has taken initiative to bond for this project to make it happen. As far as the public works divisions within the county, the school district, the hospital, they'll be footing the bill for the subscriber units themselves. The other initiative that the county has taken on here is that they're going to supply the radios for all public safety in Itasca County. We realized the small townships, the small cities, not being able to come up with the funding for the subscriber units to make this happen. So the county has taken the initiative to move this forward by paying for the radios with the understanding that we're going to all put money aside for the future for the replacement of those radios. One other point I'd like to make in regards to the cost. We sat and looked back on what we paid for our subscriber units 23, 24 years ago that we have in our law enforcement vehicles today. The mobile radios that we paid for back then was $4,000. The portable radios were $2,800 back then. The cost today is actually less for those mobile radios and portable radios today than it was 20-some years ago.
Thank you both for your testimony. The next two people, if you would come down, would Chief Mike Goldstein and Dean Kampler. I did want to say to the folks here from CrimNet, I hope we can at least start your presentation today. We're going to probably have you come back to finish it up next week. Sir, would you state your name for the record?
Sure. Mr. Chairman, committee members, Dean Kampler, Fire Chief, City of Ramsey and Anoka County. We've heard a lot about the technology. I guess what I'd like to do is just tell you a little bit of a success story with the new system that Anoka County implemented. Anoka County went on the system fourth quarter of 2004. Unfortunately, the City of Ramsey experienced a true disaster in December of that year with a building explosion which resulted in three fatalities. As the incident commander on the fire side of this incident, I just have the highest regard for this system that we experienced. First of all, as an incident commander, one of the biggest things you have to do is you have all the resources, all your neighbors are willing to come and help, but you have to manage those resources adequately. And the comments on the manpower issue I think is really critical to mention here. The system we were using before, you were limited to two or three channels to do all that communication on. Well, if you want to spell disaster, have all these people trying to squeeze in communication time on just a couple of channels. Again, we had just implemented the system, but we utilized like six communication sectors. I'm going to call it sectors. So we had safety on a couple of channels. We had the actual blast site. Traffic, all were on unique channels there, so it really made handling the resources that we had available to us, it really helped in the coordination of that. Along with that, the second item I'd like to bring up here, I really think this adds a safety issue to our responding emergency staff. If we can let them communicate to us with information that has to come to us at a real ready fashion, and not waiting to make that communication, I think that really just expands the safety of our people that are responding to these types of disasters. When we respond, a lot of times it takes quite a bit of time to just figure out what's going on, and the safety of our responders is absolutely critical. But those are my comments, unless you have questions.
Thank you, Chief. You want to introduce yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chair and committee members, good morning. My name is Mike Goldstein. I'm the police chief for the city of Plymouth, and I'm also a member of the statewide radio board representing the Minnesota Chiefs of Police Association. I thank you for this opportunity, and I'm here to speak to you this morning to talk about how well the system works. But before I share some of those stories, I want to go back to 2003, where I had an opportunity to go to Arlington, Virginia, for an after-action report on the attack on the Pentagon. I was able to spend 3.5 days going through a detailed assessment of what worked and what didn't work on 9/11. The critical success factor for the folks in Arlington was the fact that they had the ability to communicate. Literally within seconds after the plane struck the Pentagon, their plans, which they had in place, went into action, and the number one critical success factor, as I stated before, was their ability to communicate. They had dozens and dozens of federal, state, and local entities communicating with one another on an interoperable system. At the time, we didn't have anything like that here in Minnesota. That said, in November of 1998, before we had the system in place, I was a first-line supervisor, a patrol sergeant, involved in a critical incident where lying underneath the backside of my squad car at a shooting, I was able to try to command an 11-agency operation on one channel. And while it was a successful end result, it was incredibly difficult to manage. I think if you reflect back to what I learned in Arlington, when they talked about the success of an interoperable system, you can equate what happened in New York City to find out when they couldn't talk to another, greater disaster resulted. Whether it be large-scale fires, a significant crash, a SWAT call-out, or a natural disaster, which can and does occur anywhere in the state of Minnesota, again, the critical success factor in our ability to respond efficiently and appropriately is the ability to communicate. We have incident command systems, and we have national mandates telling us how we have to break out and respond to certain events, but without the ability to communicate with one another, it doesn't work. After receiving the system in Hennepin County, we use it daily, and it's used throughout the county and beyond throughout the metro area. Of late, we've used the system to work on two school exercises. We have two high schools in our community. We did two school exercises about 9 months apart from one another. One was a little bit smaller in scale than the other. The larger scale event involved 13 different agencies, where we had helicopters, we had public works, we had relocation centers, perimeters, tactical units. We had talk groups for our evaluators and our controllers. In essence, we had 13 different talk groups going based on the system that we have in place today. And it worked. It allowed us to be more efficient. It allowed us to be more effective. And then at the end of the day, we were very successful in our operation. The incidents that I have spoken to, whether it be shootings, fires, other disasters, are not reserved for the metro area. Therefore, this system needs to be built out throughout the state. It is a top priority for the state chiefs and sheriffs, the MPPOA, EMS, and fire as well. And again, what I equate all of this to is how many more examples do we need throughout the country or here in the state of Minnesota where we don't get it right? And I think the public has the expectation, at a minimum, for us to be able to communicate with one another in an effective manner to make things happen when we're responding to their emergencies. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you both for your testimony. We next have Milo Bennett and Buck McAlpin. Mr. Bennett, you want to introduce yourself for the record, please?
Sure. My name is Milo Bennett. I'm the fire chief of the Centennial Fire District, and we serve three cities in Anoka County. We started in Anoka County looking at this system way back in 1997. We did a study. We looked at it, and we recommended that we go to 800, but the cost was a limiting factor, so we put it aside. We went back in 2001 because our old system was getting worse, not better. And again, we recommended 800, and we were fortunate enough that our county found a way to fund much of it the way that Itasca County is funding it. They issued bonds, we used some grant money, and they actually bought the portables and the mobiles for all our vehicles as well. Noka County spent, I believe, $12.5 million. We added five towers. We shared towers with the Department of Transportation in many cases. One of those towers is located in the State Correctional Facility in Lionel Lakes, which is in my community. Prior to having the 800 system, and we went out in October of 2004, by the way, prior to having that, if I was working in a house on a medical situation and I wanted to talk to my dispatcher, I'd have to go inside that house, hold my handheld in the air, and hopefully from the far side of our city I could reach our dispatch and communicate with them. Those problems have all gone away, and we've been on it 2.5 years now, and we can't even imagine that we have to do that kind of stuff anymore because the new one works well. We also shared one dispatch frequency with 15 fire departments, which worked all right, but when we separated to do tactical operations, I shared a frequency with 5 fire departments. Obviously, if there was 2 incidents going within those 5 fire departments, we were all over the top of each other, and it created sometimes a dangerous situation because we didn't know who was talking to who. 800 has solved all that. I now have 3 tactical channels for my fire department alone. When I go next door to work with another agency, the dispatch does something quick and patches me up, and we're all together, and it just works. Anoka County prides itself when we do a lot of automatic aid back and forth between the fire departments. That saves manpower and costs, and the dispatch and the 800 system is a key factor in allowing us to do that. So, with that,
thank you for your testimony, sir. Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair and members, Buck McAlpin. I'm the president of the Minnesota Ambulance Association, and I also serve on the statewide radio armor board as a representative from the Ambulance Association. The Ambulance Association represents all 300 ambulance services in Minnesota, from every denomination, from fire-based to small municipal ambulance services. We've made this an initiative of ours also this year, after some questions were answered in the governor's budget recommendations. Commissioner Leslie, Commissioner Campion, and their staff heard our concerns over operations costs, and that was definitely addressed in the governor's budget proposal this year. I'll give a little different spin on it from rural Minnesota. In northeast and northwest Minnesota, currently today on the system, the current systems they use, we have ambulance services that can't receive their ambulance pages or even communicate when they go county to county. In northwest Minnesota, a couple ambulance services, Roseau and Great Plains, cover 4,000 square miles of service area. And they go into multiple counties, and they have to relay from county to county because the current system doesn't allow them to do that. Those folks were very skeptical years ago when they heard about the cost of 800. Our ambulance services can budget and forecast in their budgets of how to replace capital equipment in their vehicles and portable radios, but one thing they can't do is invest this large expense locally to build out the current system, the backbone that we need done. So I think to keep it short, I work for North Memorial. We have the opportunity where we use a system in the metro, and it's been phenomenal for us to use. A few recent big incidents, the bus accidents up in Ham Lake. The gentleman that took care and commanded that incident did it from the back of his Tahoe in Bloomington, Minnesota. He was a manager on call coordinating 15 ambulances and 3 helicopters going to that incident. The current system in the past wouldn't allow that to happen. And as these gentlemen have testified to, setting up talk groups, law enforcement, fire, the whole 9 yards of how it worked together. So our association definitely stand behind the governor's budget proposal to move this system forward.
Question?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just a quick comment. I'd like to thank Buck for mentioning the fact that District 1A seems to have some real excitement on ambulance services. Thanks for mentioning it, since both those are my services.
You're welcome.
Thank you both for your testimony. We have 2 more presenters, Mike Myers and Jay Sickink. I'm sure I didn't do your name right. Who's going to go first?
I can go first. I'm Jay Sickink, and this is my friend and colleague, Michael Myers.
and we're here to represent the Central Minnesota Regional Advisory Committee. I work for Stearns County up in St. Cloud, Minnesota. Give you a brief history of who we are and what we've been doing up in Central Minnesota. We originally organized the Central Minnesota Regional Advisory Committee back in September 2005 with one city and in five counties participating. And we are now at eight counties in one city, so in approximately a year and a half. Those counties include Benton County, Kandy, Ojai County, Meeker, Morrison, Sherburne, Stearns, Todd, Wright, and the city of St. Cloud. Plus, we have been contacted by two other counties, Big Stone and Swift, to join our organization. So we're from St. Cloud all the way out to the South Dakota border. These counties are coming forward and wanting to be part of this system. Some of the things that the Regional Advisory Committee has been doing, we've been putting together a joint powers agreement to form a regional radio board for our area. We manage regional planning efforts and regional planning grants that we've received over the last couple of years. We've been adopting interim standards for operational and management and governance of the local 800 megahertz subsystems. Plus, we have been encouraging and facilitating broad-based participation of interoperability communications throughout the region. We do that a lot by training and educating the other counties that they join. What is 800 megahertz and how it impacts? And they talk about skeptics. Many times our biggest skeptics are now our biggest supporters of the system. And we found that even in Stearns County, we have 14 police agencies and 20-some fire departments that respond to calls in Stearns County. And again, our biggest skeptics there are now our biggest supporters as they learn about the system. Some of what we've been doing, we've been doing a lot of planning up in our area. We've been able to combine a lot of the planning efforts. One of our big success stories was we were getting the plans for Sherburne County and Wright County. We combined that into one plan. We saved thousands of dollars by combining those efforts and getting those plannings forward. And their completion of their plan is scheduled for March of this year. We've also have plans out for Kandy, Meeker, and Todd counties, and they should be done in March this year. And we're also doing a regional study for schools and hospitals. What we decided to do is for each of the eight counties in the regional advisory committee, we're going to pick a school district and study how the 800 system would benefit them. And Stearns County chose Ricori for obvious reasons. These things happen outstate, not just out, you know, in the metro area, and it's very important for us to have this communication system. A lot of the planning was provided through grants that we've obtained over the last couple of years. Where we're at, we have created and finalized our joint powers agreement for the regional board, and has been in front of the county boards at the eight counties right now and ready to sign. So we will have a regional radio board in place. We're hoping by the end of March that all agreements will be signed. I don't know if there's any more on that. Sorry, I'm trying to keep this quick because I know we're short of time. A lot of skeptics are our biggest supporters. We've had the same issues in Stearns County, getting funding for subscriber units. That's a big cost for volunteer fire departments and police agencies. We've been able to help out in the area. FEMA has been the FEMA grants have been very conducive for interoperability and communications, so a lot of the agencies that have applied have been very successful. Stearns County has also seen the need. Our sheriff was in the crowd that supported it, our county board, and we were able to help out the agencies by having a capital equipment bond and help provide radios to agencies. So we're proud to announce that we're getting 25 more agencies' radios this spring. So all our fire and police will have radios in the county in the next 3 months.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Michael Myers. I'm the IT coordinator for the City of St. Cloud. I'm also the vice chair on the Central Minnesota Regional Advisory Committee. I don't have a whole lot to add other than the fact that one of the counties that is involved with us, Morrison County, is not part of the Phase 3 build-out. However, we still have to work with those entities. So moving this statewide is the route we need to take because, like our city alone, our fire department has a 14-county mutual aid agreement, so we work with multiple counties outside of there, and we need to get the system built.
Yep. But, hey, one more thing, too. I've been involved in the system for about 4 years now. I go to regional, local, and state meetings, and every goal in those meetings to make it not only how do you get the system work, how do you get the system to work better. Just recently, 2 weeks ago, we had some assistance from Hennepin County, Anoka County, City of Minneapolis to help the gang task force in St. Cloud, and they were able to operate with 800 megahertz radios, which they wouldn't have been able to do in the past. We are now going to meet with those agencies, and Mike and I are techies. We're not in the field, but you have techies side by side with the police officers, and we are going to meet and see how the radios work and what can we do to make them better. So I just want to point out that we're constantly trying to improve this system, and it does work, and the Regional Advisory Committee supports the governor's proposal on this.
Representative Haas. Thank you very much. These folks are from my district in central Minnesota, and they really pushed heavily and got the trust of some of the county board members to put this in. And one of the people who is not here today is Tom Hannon, and Tom Hannon is getting some new parts in our fine hospital, and he's going to be back with you and arguing these points into the future, I hope.
Yes.
So say hi for me. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen, for your testimony. Mr. Good, why don't you just come up for 1 second? I just want to ask you a question about if you want to proceed or not, or if we should have you come back. Commissioner, maybe we should. I don't want to. I apologize for this taking so long, but I wanted to give everyone an opportunity to be heard. You can either start the presentation or we can come back. We have I think we have Thursday wide open next week where we were going to cancel the meeting and let everyone sleep in, but maybe we'll have to. Mr. Good, I'll leave it up to you. Do you want to start, or do you want to wait till next week, and we'll have your full presentation?
Mr. Chair, members, why don't I at least have Sheriff Olson come up? And
okay.
He has been on our task force. He's a close-in stakeholder during some of the good times and the bad times. Ed Kirshner is here. He's the chair of the task force and represents the fair criminal justice community as well as the public. And then John Lally, I believe, is here from the Office of Enterprise Technology, and he's here to testify about from the Office of Enterprise Technology perspective and on the program management.
And these folks, the Kims, okay, so let's do that.
We come back and do the...
Okay.
I prepare a PowerPoint presentation that I think when we talk to the members and staff, and we know there's some questions, and so we try to develop a PowerPoint presentation that answers all those questions. So we could maybe pull that off until
sure.
Next week. But let the people that are here...
Makes perfect sense. Okay, so the presenters here on CrimNet, let me also announce to the committee, if you're going to the graduation at the Red Wing facility tomorrow, or if you've made any changes, would you make sure Ms. Lacombe knows that the bus is leaving from the Capitol at 8:30 in the morning? So who is first to... If you could introduce yourself for the record, we'll go till 9:30, and again, we'll schedule the rest of CrimNet for next week.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Debbie Kirshner, and I'm here as chair of the CrimNet Task Force, speaking to you on behalf of the task force in support of the priorities and the budget proposals that you have before you. As many of you may be aware, the task force is statutorily created to assist the CrimNet Program Office and the Policy Group in the priorities and the work in the integration efforts in the criminal justice system. Rather than bringing our task force members here, I wanted to let you know that I am speaking on behalf of quite a diverse group. And our group has over 30 members, and those members represent the Sheriff's Association, the Police Chiefs Association, city and county attorneys, the public defenders, judges, court administration, probation officers and corrections, the House and the Senate, and incidentally, Representative Cornish is one of our members. We have representatives appointed by the Attorney General, the Sentencing Guidelines Commission, the Department of Corrections, the Department of Public Safety, the Office of Enterprise Technology, which you will hear from in a moment, as well as the Department of Administration, Association of Minnesota Counties, League of Minnesota Cities, as well as four public members, including one representing the area of crime victims. And I say all that just to let you know that we do represent every area of the criminal justice enterprise as well as the public, and we take our responsibilities very seriously in dealing with the areas of criminal justice integration, the efforts of the CrimNet Program Office, as well as communicating back and representing the views of our constituencies. Over the past few months, we have worked actively with the CrimNet Program Office in identifying the priorities for proceeding in that very important effort of criminal justice integration efforts over the next few years. We worked with our constituencies to identify those priorities at the task force, and we identified high-level priorities that we thought were critical to these efforts. We approved them. We passed them to the policy group. The policy group then worked with the CrimNet Program Office, and those are the foundation for the budget priorities that you have before you today. So our constituencies and our membership have been actively involved in identifying those priorities and support the budget priorities that you have before you. So on behalf of the task force, I would like to urge your consideration and approval of those priorities. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kirshner. Any questions?
Sheriff Bolton is a long-term task force member and has been around during some of the days where we had problems, and I think you'll see in our presentation we want to give you the history, both the things that were going well and the things that we didn't do very well a few years ago, and then where we're at today. So Sheriff Bolton, I think, has that perspective of kind of seeing it over several years.
Welcome to the committee. You want to introduce yourself for the record, please?
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Sheriff Bud Olson from Carver County. I just want to say that, if I can, Mr. Chair, I also came to testify on the 800, and Carver County was the first county to go live on this 800-trunked interoperable radio system, and we had a Waconia bomb threat incident at our school, and I just want the committee to know, is if it wasn't for that interoperability, we couldn't have had the canines from other regions of the metro or the fire districts come in and assist us there. So it has worked very well for us. On CrimNet, I am part of the Sheriff's Association membership there. I've been there for 3 years now, I believe. When I entered this project, folks, I thought I was at the task force meeting, and I was at a different meeting. I was at a steering committee meeting, and I learned along this journey that that there were concerns and criticisms and issues going on with this task force. I'm here today, and my short and brief testimony is I have full confidence and faith in CrimNet, and for 30 years of being in law enforcement, my brother-in-law being killed in the line of duty, I have a great passion for what we're doing. And I think all of you should have that same passion for this project, and I'll tell you why. When we can't get the right information in the right hands in the right time for the right people, we are going to end up in situations like we've seen with the Poyer case, with the Swanson case, and other cases that we've had. And my family has had a story of our own relative to having good communication and coordination in law enforcement and criminal justice. I am a pilot county for many pieces of this CrimNet project. I was unaware I was until I got a phone call and said, "We're piloting in Carver County. How's that sound?" And I said, "That's just great with me." So I'm here today to say that the sheriffs are behind this. Law enforcement is behind this. I think we are on the right track. I enjoy what we're doing with the CrimNet project. I think they have great challenges to meet, and I think funding is one of the biggest ones. And that's where this committee and where the legislature comes in. We need that help. We need that funding to make this work. When the cop in the street can make an arrest like we did the other night because we had the right information at the right time in Carver County, he gave us a false name on the street. We brought him into booking. We were able to run him through a new system that the BCA and the CrimNet Project Office has done, and we found out he wasn't who he said he was. He had a felony warrant out of McLeod County, and he was a different person. That's how this worked, and I thank you for this for my time here.
Thank you, Sheriff. Is there anyone else?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and members, my name is John Lally. I'm the planning director for the Office of Enterprise Technology. Mr. Good has related that a number of years ago the project seemed to be losing focus, which is not uncommon for a project of this scope and complexity. The Office of Technology, beginning about 2001, and now the Office of Enterprise Technology, has been working very closely with the project management on this effort and are very pleased with the results and what we've seen in the changes the last couple of years. The project management, their sense of direction, their planning, their accountability have all been best practices from our standpoint. We've had one of our senior project managers overseeing this project for about 4 years now, I think, and one of our agency executives is on the advisory board as well. And we're very pleased with the progress they've made from a standpoint of the quality of the project management and the quality of the governance process.
Any questions? Thank you, Mr. Lally. Is there anyone else at this point, Mr. Good?
Mr. Chair, no, maybe then if you want, I could come back with the commissioner and the superintendent next time. And
Mr. Chair, you said you're going to go to 9:30, so I saw a couple of minutes. I thought I would offer two very quick items for 90 seconds, if you would allow me.
Please.
For the good of the order.
Introduce yourself.
On the 800, Mr. Chair, members of Michael Campion, the Commissioner of Public Safety, on the 800 megahertz project, I'd like to remind people that this initiative, once rolled out and once the additional 30 cents is added to each phone bill per month, it will be a cost of $12, less than $12 a year for cell phone owners to fund this program, this entire program. Less than $12 a year, because it'll be 95 cents a month. Now you heard the importance of that. You put in context the cost to build this program out for individual cell phone users, quite frankly, is a bargain. On the CRIMNET project and the CRIMNET initiative, by statute, the Commissioner of Public Safety is the chair of the policy group. During Mr. Good's presentation, you will hear the good, the bad, and the ugly. Frankly, 3 or 4 years ago, this project was off track. I think the last 2.5, 3.5 years, it's gotten back on track. The strength of CRIMNET, Mr. Chair and members, is not the technology. The strength of CRIMNET, quite frankly, in my view, is the task force and its members. As Deb Kirshner talked about, and she's the chair of the task force, there's some 30, 35 members on that task force. They meet regularly, once a month. I go to all those meetings. They're engaged. They're robust. There's dynamic meetings at place, and the relationships that have been forged during the CRIMNET rollout and integration enterprise is what makes CRIMNET as successful as it has been up to now. And in my sense over the last 3 years, almost 3 years being the chair, is that Minnesota literally is in the forefront in the country in the integration of criminal justice information. So we should be really very proud of that, and I would ask for your support of that governor's initiative. Thank you for the opportunity, Mr. Chair members.
Thank you, Commissioner. I do think we really need to, we need the opportunity to thoroughly look at the CRIMNET budget. The CRIMNET has had its ups and downs, as everyone knows. I think this whole committee is supportive of it, but they are asking for a lot of money over a long period of time, and unlike the fee for the 911 armor, a lot of this is coming from the general fund, so I hope we can have a frank discussion about that. We have one question, Representative Coles.
Mr. Chair, just a comment. First of all, I had to sneak out of the room when my sheriff, Bud Olson, was testifying about CRIMNET, but Representative Zell is saying he did a good job. I'm sure he did. I was talking to the kids in the back of the room from Chaska FFA. I was hoping to get them in here to watch their sheriff testify, but I wanted to make a note for the record, Mr. Chair. I know that Fire Chief Randy Olson from the Waconia Fire Department had been here to testify about the radio, the interoperability component, what Carver County has done. We were on board right away in 2001. He had to leave. He may have been. I encouraged him to make mention of a personal situation. My wife's family owns a small commercial building in the city of Waconia, a couple retail stores and some storage underneath, and they had a fire a year and a half ago. And there were five agencies that was five fire agencies that responded and utilized the communications network. So I'm sorry, Chief Sorensen didn't get an opportunity to testify, but I wanted on the record that he had been here to support the system. He had to sneak out. We had thought he was on the list, but apparently he wasn't.
Well, I apologize for that, Representative Coles. He wasn't on the list. Maybe I should have asked if there was anyone else who wanted to testify, but thank you for bringing that up. Is there any other business before the committee? If not, this meeting's adjourned.